funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What inspires America's top-performing science students, and what contributions do they make to solving real-world problems? For many of us, the phrase science fair conjures up hazy memories of poster board and potato clocks and the ever-popular baking soda volcano. But for truly gifted high school students today, science fairs are an opportunity to conduct real research into the puzzles of the natural world. And those who compete in the so-called Super Bowl of science fairs find their work is taken seriously in both academic and corporate environments. Writer Judy Dutton takes us into the lives and minds of a dozen brilliant young scholars in her new book, Science Fair Season, 12 Kids, a Robot Named Scorch, and What It Takes to Win. Judy, welcome to Think.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here.
So as I mentioned in the introduction, you call the Intel International Science and Engineering Fair the science fair of the Super Bowl, rather, of science fairs. Talk about what drew you to this topic.
What interested me in this topic is that science education is big news right now, and yet we often hear that America is declining in the realm of science education and otherwise. For example, a recent study found that among 34 developed countries, the U.S. ranked 17th in science education and 24th in math. And that's far behind China, Japan, South Korea, Canada, Finland, and many other countries. And so in this kind of bleak look at America's educational system, science fairs, I think, are the silver lining. Because in science fairs, kids can really get excited in a way that, for example, taking a test, answering the right multiple-choice question. Science fairs are so much better than that because kids can kind of get their hands dirty and fix problems in the real world. And I think that's why science fairs are key to fixing America's educational system.
I was astonished to read that at the Intel Fair, and there's like 1,500 kids a year who come from all around the world to compete here, one in five contestants has a patent pending, and this is high school students.
Yes, yes. I didn't believe it either at first. And yet when you go to these science fairs and you see what they're creating, it makes complete sense. For example, I was just at the International Science Fair, Intel ISEF is what it's called, in Los Angeles, which is going on right now. And I saw a device that fits in the exhaust pipe to your car that will reduce CO2 emissions by 92%.
Wow.
And it uses algae inside this device to do that. And this student has a patent, and it's not surprising at all that he has a patent on his project. And then there are plenty of others. There's another student who is profiled in my book named Taylor Wilson. He has, I think, two patents pending and another one in the works. And his research is all about detecting nuclear material. So he is kind of determined to fight terrorists and keep terrorists out of our country by creating these devices that can detect nuclear material in cargo containers coming into the U.S. or other means. So he's another kind of prime example. He's the poster child of what science fairs can do for our country today.
And Taylor is such a great story because, you know, at the age when other kids are asking for, like, an iPod or a Game Boy, he begged his dad to get him a Geiger counter.
Yeah, and I think he owns around 26 Geiger counters at this point. One of them costs thousands of dollars. It's funny that you can actually buy a lot of these things on eBay and otherwise, and he goes mining for uranium on the weekends with his dad. And of course, his parents were extremely worried when he started building. He started building bombs when he was 10 years old. And as a parent myself, I would think that it would be very tempting to kind of slam the brakes on his little pursuits.
Right, right.
And yet they were kind of courageous enough to nurture his interests. Well, and as a result, he's now working with the Department of Homeland Security.
Yeah, so at 14, his entry into the Intel ISEF was a working nuclear reactor.
Yes.
Huh. What did the other kids in this, I mean, what was the reaction when this thing was wheeled in?
I still remember when I first saw that nuclear reactor, and that was at the International Fair 2 years ago when I first started writing this book. So I saw this nuclear reactor, and it looks really scary. It looks like a cappuccino maker on steroids. Mm-hmm. It's very frightening looking, and everyone was kind of eyeing it from a distance, and nobody wanted to get too close to it. And I thought, who could make this device? And then I met Taylor, and Taylor was, under 5 foot. He was under 100 pounds. His voice was, high as a choir boy's. He was just a kid.
Yeah.
He was 14 years old. And yet once he opened his mouth and you heard him talking about radioisotopes and fissionable materials and things like that, you realize that this is a breed unto himself.
And this kind of, and I'll use the phrase here, sort of scary, smart intelligence really does require mentoring. And that seems to be a theme throughout the book, is that a lot of these kids really need someone to sort of help them find the right direction.
Right. And I think that's really important. With Taylor, he was in public school and he was sleeping through school. Mm-hmm. And he was still getting straight A's, but he was bored to death. And that's when he started building this nuclear fusion reactor in his garage. And it's very frightening when a kid with that level of intelligence doesn't have guidance. And as a result, his parents enrolled him in a very special school called the Davidson Academy, which is located in Reno, Nevada. And that school caters specifically to these really smart kids. It nurtures their talents. The school only accepts kids who are scoring in the top 0.1 percentile on IQ tests. So the kids go there, and instead of being bored and coasting through class, they're challenged. And it's really, I feel like they're doing amazing things. This school is kind of like a budding petri dish of Einsteins and Mozarts, and who knows what this school could produce in the future. And I think it's such an amazing new development in the world of education to kind of focus on these bright kids and really challenge them and see what they can do. Because a lot of the times, schools focus on bringing up the low-achieving kids up to par.
Mm-hmm.
But in this instance, they're taking the very brightest kids and they're challenging them, and I think it's such a great idea because who knows, these kids, I'm sure we'll be reading about all of these kids well into the future.
I love the story. I think it was Taylor at the Davidson School when he makes plasma in the microwave in the school cafeteria.
Yes, it's definitely, you can do nuclear experiments in a microwave, and yes, there's a way that a grape can be put in a microwave, and if you put it in a certain spot in the microwave, it can create plasma. And plasma is kind of the precursor to nuclear fusion, where you actually fuse atoms together. And so yes, he destroyed the microwave in his school, and they kind of gave him a little stern, like, don't put things in the microwave anymore, Taylor, type of speech. And yet he went on from there to actually achieve nuclear fusion in the device that he built. And it's really, he's the youngest person in the world to create a device that does nuclear fusion.
Hmm. Another really cool story here is about this boy named Tristan, who I guess his entire life, a lot of these kids seem to share this thing that they get really stuck on one topic and they cannot learn enough about it. And his thing was insects. And he trained drug-sniffing cockroaches?
Yes, I love the story of Tristan. He actually was my inspiration to do this book in the first place. I read about Tristan in the New York Times, and he was always fascinated by insects. For example, he made an insect repellent out of household items. And so when he wanted to really win big at a science fair, he decided to train cockroaches how to sniff for drugs, because cockroaches actually have a keen sense of smell. And drug-sniffing dogs are actually very expensive to train.
Sure.
So he decided to train cockroaches how to do this, and so he had his cockroaches and kind of would expose them to certain scents, and then he would kind of train them how to react whenever they had these scents nearby. So in a way, and what he's doing isn't really that, not only could it save a lot of money for the police force and drug detection, But it's not unheard of. For example, there are scientists who are working on bomb-sniffing bees, because bees also have a great sense of smell. So he was like, in other words, the things that these kids are doing aren't ludicrous. They're perfectly applicable science to the real world, to fixing problems out there today.
And I guess it's a standard sort of Pavlovian response, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Really amazing. We will talk more in just a minute with Judy Dutton. Her new book is called Science Fair Season, 12 Kids, a Robot Named Scorch, and What It Takes to Win. If you'd like to be part of this conversation, you can call in now to 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. Want to update you. This is really exciting. The numbers just keep melting away. It's like someone's on a super diet here to get the station to be exactly financially fit. We have $36,250 left to raise. If we can do that by the end of the afternoon, a friend of KERA and family law attorney in Tarrant County, Diane Wanger, will give the station an additional $5,000. This is a great incentive. Let's just say none of us really needs to be encouraged to want this drive to end today, but Diane Wanger's gift will be really appreciated here at the station. Your gift right now in any amount can help us get that much closer. We would love to hear from you now at kera.org or at 1-888-694-6931. Jeff Whittington is here now. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. What a fascinating topic today, and really excited that today very well could be the last day of this membership campaign. Just $35,704 left to raise in the drive, and the drive will end. And at that moment, the drive will end, and Diane Wanger will give the station an additional $5,000. Don't be left out of this successful conclusion of the membership campaign. Let's get as far as we can today during the Think Show. Let's get your contribution tallied during the Think Show today, please, at kera.org or via the phone at 888-694-6931.
I have reason to believe this will be a very exciting 2 hours as we continue to list off the amounts as they decrease, the amounts left to raise. Thank you so much to Mark Edwards in Garland. Thanks Colleen Dean in Dallas and Delmyra Jennings in Roanoke. Thank you Lori Sanders in Coppell and Kate Lyon in Euless. Appreciate also the gift by Brett Lang in Fort Worth. Really appreciate your contributions. They do make a difference, and today we are all hoping, and I say we, including you, because I know you do, we are all hoping this is the final day of the drive. Your contribution right now will keep that snowball rolling down the hill and getting bigger and bigger.
We started a couple weeks ago with an overall goal of $625,000, and that's the goal, to keep the station financially healthy for this this part of the year. It's our last membership campaign of our fiscal year, which here at KERA ends on June 30th, and we won't be back fundraising on the air until the fall, about 4.5-5 months from now. It's a long time, and we're thrilled about that, and we know that you are too. That's why we're asking you to just do your part today to help us wrap this drive up as soon as possible, maybe even this afternoon, maybe during the next couple of hours, by calling 888-694-6931 or make that contribution online at kera.org. If you're interested in Judy Dutton's book, Science Fair Season, we would love to thank you with your very own copy of the book when you join the station with a contribution of $120 or more today.
We also have other thank you gifts from the other days. All the books that you've heard us discuss are probably still available, so make sure that you check those out online at kera.org or ask about them on the phone at 1-888-694-6931. Cannot stress this enough. Always, your gift is also an encouragement to someone else to give. Today in particular, the 2 hours of Think in particular, your gift makes a difference because people hear that number coming down, they get excited, and they want to make their contribution and hear the number falling. Your contribution in any amount really helps us not only to end the drive, but to provide you with the content that you choose to listen to every day, that you spend your valuable time with day in and day out on KERA. Please get in touch with us now to make your gift at kera.org online, or if you prefer, 1-888-694-6931. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's summer youth programs. Camps in Legos, writing, art, reading, math, and science held at SMU in Plano and on the main campus, Dallas. Learn more at smu.edu/summeryouth.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is writer Judy Dutton. Her new book is called Science Fair Season, 12 Kids, a Robot Named Scorch, and What It Takes to Win. You can be part of the conversation by calling on the phone at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send an email to think@kera.org. Judy, another thing that people who really care about science education worry about is that a lot of girls are sort of turned off to the idea of being scientists because they don't think it's cool, they don't think it's attractive. You write here about a young woman named Eliza who did exceptionally well at the science fair, who seems to have everything else going for her. She had a passion for science that she herself never expected.
Yes, she actually ended up a science fair star by accident. So she just ended up taking a class on science research because nothing else fit her schedule between her acting and her French and her other things that she wanted to do. She had no interest in science whatsoever. And yet after taking this class and entering the science fair, she caught the bug. And she realized that science is fascinating and creative. That's the thing I think a lot of kids don't think about science, is that they think it's a bunch of dry numbers and statistics. And Eliza realized that science was extremely creative in terms of problems that need to be solved. And that's why she decided to switch her career path, in fact, after doing well at science fairs, from being an actress to being a science documentarian. So she's now behind the lens. And she has done, for example, a documentary on CERN, the Hadron Collider in Switzerland. And she's also done a documentary film on honeybees and the colony collapse disorder that happens where the honeybees were disappearing and what's going on with them and what can we do to bring them back. So she's done a couple of documentary films on that. And she never would have gotten into this field if it weren't for science fairs. Science fairs opened her eyes to the fact that science was creative and that the kids who participate in science fairs are really cool people. It's not just a nerd convention. Another girl that I met at the science fair was Miss Teen Wyoming 2009 and an Olympic skier. So, and another kid that I met at the science fair had 5 patents and a $12 million company. And everyone at the science fair knew who he was and pointed him out. And even in college now, kids know him as, oh, yeah, you're the next Bill Gates. So I don't see how you couldn't think that's pretty cool to be kind of a millionaire in your first year in college. So I think the tide is turning, and I think people are realizing that science is a very cool pursuit.
Yeah, and the boy who built that robot named Scorch, this was about a decade ago, named in your subtitle, in fact, hadn't felt very cool. And then suddenly when he was nationally famous for this amazing thing that he did, he had girls wanting to go out with him and was very socially successful.
Absolutely. Girls were throwing themselves at him. and it's really, he is a great example because he illustrates that science fair kids can win tons of scholarships, just like the high school quarterback.
Yeah.
So, for example, Ryan Patterson, just by building his robots at home, he ended up winning more than $420,000 in prizes and scholarships.
Wow.
And that's just, you know, and that was by inventing a glove that could translate sign language. And, yes, he ended up becoming very famous at his school, and he ended up on CNN and Good Morning America. He actually asked his girlfriend to the prom on Good Morning America.
Using the robot, right?
Yes, yes, exactly.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go to Courtney in Dallas. Hi, Courtney.
Hi, I'm so pleased to hear speak of all of this. I'm a science teacher and a scientist myself, did research for my master's degree, and it's just such a thrill to hear that there are people interested in science. My question is, I got the privilege to judge a science fair a few years ago. Of course, it was elementary school level, not this level that she's been talking about, but we were just amazed by how many students were cheating by using internet sources and finding out other blue ribbon prizes for, you know, first place science fair winners. And we were just, I was just wondering, you know, what her experience was doing her research with the influence of the Internet on science fair projects.
Thanks for your call.
That's a really interesting question. And I think I remember asking this question to a number of students who often are very, their time is crunched with tons of homework, and it's always very tempting to cheat, even in small ways. For example, just copying their friend's math homework before they get to class because they didn't have time to get to it the night before.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of pressure on these students to cheat just to keep up with the other cheaters who never get caught. And so if you don't cheat, you're kind of, you lose out as a result, and which I found very sad. And yet, so I asked these students, well, do kids ever cheat in science fairs? And they said, well, it's really actually really hard to cheat with a science fair. And the reason for this is because during the judging process, the judges are throwing questions at you constantly. And so in that type of environment, you need to be on your toes and be able to respond to their questions. So when science fairs get to the level where you are being judged, I think it is really hard to cheat because you really need to know your stuff. And if you have cut corners or cheated or copied something, you just won't know it as well as someone who's really done the research. And judges are really good at picking that up. So that was the one thing that I found after talking to the students that are competing in these high-level science fairs.
You know what surprised me, Judy, reading the book, is that it sounds like to a great extent, parents really encourage their kids who have these amazing abilities and desires to be really good at science. I didn't see any like tiger mom, really over the top parents making their kids into science fair champions.
Right. That's really funny because, of course, as a journalist, I was kind of hoping that maybe I would find a tiger mom in the bunch,
yeah.
Or you know, just because it would be interesting reading. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I looked high and low, and I could not find a tiger mom anywhere to be seen. And I think the reason for that is because the kids who are really successful, the kids who get to these international level fairs, really are passionate about what they do. You can't get there just on the pressure of a parent alone. So I think a lot of what the parents do in this book is they just stand out of the way and let their kids pursue what they want to pursue.
And buy them Geiger counters.
Yes, exactly. Buy them Geiger counters. One mother actually took her kid out of public school because the kid was bored in public school.
Mm-hmm.
So she homeschooled him. And she had no background in homeschooling whatsoever. And yet she just said, why don't you just study what you want to study and read what you want to read? And, of course, that was a very risky thing to say to a 15-year-old. He might just end up playing video games all day. And yet, faced with this kid, he just ended up, you know, picking up random books and kind of doing what he wanted to do, and that's how he ended up with 5 patents and a $12 million company.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We'll go to Colleyville next and speak with Ted. Hello, Ted.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks.
I have a question observation. All my life, and I'm age 60, I've heard how America is always behind the curve in science, math, and that type of thing. And yet it seems to me most of the greatest technology and breakthroughs and advances in medical technology and the like come from Americans. How do you feel about that, even though we're supposedly always behind everybody else?
Yeah, where's the disconnect, Judy?
That's a really good question. And while I was at the science fair, I did talk to a lot of students from China, because that's certainly an area where China typically scores at the very top of most science tests. And so I asked them, what's going on? Do you think that America is kind of falling behind? And the one thing that they said that I thought was interesting is that and it was a student from Shanghai who told me that students in China test very well. They take tests well. And so when there's a science test to be taken, they'll, of course, ace the exam. While American students, they said, often don't take tests as well because they aren't trained to. The edge that America has is that they have better hands-on research facilities. So while the students in China are taking tests and training for test-taking, in the U.S., they're paired up with mentors, and they actually do hands-on research that can impact the world around them. So I think that's part of what's going on in terms of the U.S.'s rank in science tests that are taken. But I do think that, in general, America's educational system could stand for a lot of improvement. I think we could challenge our brighter kids much more than we are doing. So I do think that we have a lot of work to do in our country to make things better.
Did you make any conclusions about the very best kinds of science teachers?
There were some amazing science teachers out there that I interviewed. One of them was a teacher who came from Texas, actually. He was working in Texas and at a public school, and yet he decided to take a position at a juvenile detention facility.
Yeah, it's a great story.
In Arizona. And here he is with students who were cursing him out every day and just causing trouble. They couldn't even be given pencils because pencils could be used as weapons. So the students had no pencils, and yet here he was, and he started an award-winning science fair program out of this juvenile detention facility. And two of the students that he mentored ended up with full-ride scholarships to Arizona University. So that just goes to show that the right teachers can make all the difference.
My guest is writer Judy Dutton. Her new book is called Science Fair Season, 12 Kids, a Robot Named Scorch, and What It Takes to Win. We'll take more of your calls to 1-800-933-5372. After the break, we will also take your emails to think@kera.org. If you would like to read a copy of Judy Dutton's new book, Science Fair Season, and also support KERA at or above the $120 level, we do have copies available as thank you gifts when you make that contribution. You can do it online at kera.org and be finished in a matter of just a couple of minutes. Or, of course, you can make a phone call to 1-888-694-6931. Jeff Whittington is back in studio now. And, Jeff, you know, I have to tell you, as someone who listens to the show, particularly on Fridays when I don't have an on-air shift, I would like to listen to your show tomorrow uninterrupted by membership talk.
I think everyone would. I wish we could spend the rest of this afternoon, perhaps. Maybe we can get All Things Considered for the most part uninterrupted by membership breaks. That's how it works. We started the drive a couple of weeks ago, and we said, hey, our goal is $625,000, which is a lot of money. And we know that, and we really appreciate everyone. Everyone who has contributed to the station appreciates everyone who's contributed to the station during this drive.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And we're so close now. We're just, I forgot what the number was that you quoted just a moment ago, but we are just $34,984 away from the end of the drive. That's great. We started the hour, Chris, with about $39,000 to go. So we've heard from many of you. Thank you so much. If you can make your contribution right now, it would help a lot, because if we can wrap up the drive today, and I think this is by 7 p.m. today, Diane Wenger, who's a friend of the station, also a family law attorney in Tarrant County, is going to give the station an extra $5,000 because she wants the drive to end today. We know you want the drive to end today. We want the drive to end today. Let's all do our part today at whatever level's right for you at 888-694-6931 or on the web at kera.org.
Some of the people who are making it possible to end the drive quickly are Lenora Stevens in Dallas. Thanks, Lenora. Alan and Lane Hayslip in Dallas. Lindsay Skidmore in Lake Dallas. And Mike Naring in Dallas. We would love to read your name if you are making a contribution this hour. And we can do that whether you make your contribution online or over the phone at 1-888-694-6931. By the way, if for some reason you don't want us reading your name, you can indicate that so you don't have to worry that you're thinking, I'd love to make a contribution, but I don't want want them to read my name. That's all. It's entirely up to you. Remember that we have lots of thank you gifts to sort of grease the wheels here. We do have copies of Judy Dutton's new book, Science Fair Season. This is my kids are lucky enough to have great science teachers, and I would I think I need to get three more copies because I would love to pass this book along because it's just it's great. It's very inspirational and fun to read, and there's some humor in it, and really an interesting read if you're interested in the education, particularly the science education of kids today.
If you're interested in contributing at one of the higher levels, perhaps you'd like to join the station today at the Friends $1,500 annual contribution level. Well, there are a number of thank you gifts available at that level in addition to the opportunity to meet NPR personalities when they come through and go to other special events as a friend of the station. But we'll also be able to thank you with 7,500 American Airlines Advantage miles when you join the station at the $1,500 membership level. So do your part at whatever level. Call 888-694-6931 or go to KERA.org. I want to thank Kathy and Joe Van Blargen in Dallas. They became friends of the station. Thank you so much. Also Steve Reed in Plano. And Jill Sneathen in Euless. They've all done their part, and they would now also like you to join them. Help us wrap this drive up in the next few hours with a call to 888-694-6931 or an online pledge, contribution rather, at kera.org. Please do it right now.
We so appreciate Think listeners who make time to be with us every day to listen to the show, whether live on the air or later on during the podcast. It's wonderful to have you in the audience. Your financial support makes it possible for this program to be produced. KERA requires money from listeners to operate, and so many of you understand that. We are so grateful to those of you who come through whenever we ask. We really do. We never want to make it seem that we take this support for granted because we know that it is still a minority of listeners who decide KERA is important enough to support. Strangely, though, we know you make time for the station in terms of your day. We know you make time to listen to the station. So if you can also make a financial gift, we will really appreciate it. And we will put it right back to work producing the programming that you care about. You can support KERA online at kera.org or go to 1-888-694-6931.
And don't forget, we do have copies of Judy Dutton's book, Science Fair Season, available when you join the station today at the $120 level or more. And of course, if we can end the drive by 7 p.m. And hopefully earlier this afternoon, Diane Wenger, friend of KERA and family law attorney in Tarrant County, is going to give the station an extra $5,000. So your contribution really makes a huge difference today because we want to take advantage of this challenge as well. So don't wait. Call 888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org.
Back in just a minute with Judy Dutton.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's summer youth programs. Camps in Legos, writing, art, reading, math, and science held at SMU in Plano and on the main campus, Dallas. Learn more at smu.edu/summeryouth.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is writer Judy Dutton. Her new book is called Science Fair Season, 12 Kids, a Robot Named Scorch, and What It Takes to Win. Join us on the phone at 1-800-933-5372 or via email to think@kera.org. Let's go to the phone now, and we'll speak with Garence in Dallas. Hey, Garence.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you.
Hey, general comment. For work, I travel a lot to Asia. And one of the differences I see between the U.S. And Asia is that here you hear a lot of, be it parent, friend, pastor, church, whatever, you hear the comment, oh, science is tough, math is tough, I always have problems with that in school. And I think if you say that enough, you condition and you put that response into the mind of the children as well, and they'll take that as a cop-out. Whereas when you go to Asia, you don't hear that. They really put science and math as a forefront. And you see it just at the college. We end up graduating more MBAs and lawyers and non-technical people compared to Asia. And so when we wonder why a lot of the business, and Texas is an example, we have to import people to fill all our technology slots because we don't graduate enough engineers when we're, second highest population state in the country.
Yeah, that's a great point. I really appreciate your call, Garen. Thank you so much. Judy, I thought it was interesting that in the book, a lot of these kids don't think of themselves necessarily as geniuses, and I'm using air quotes that you can't see. They just think of themselves as really hard workers.
Absolutely. That's so true. And the other thing I think people don't realize about science fairs is that you don't need a fancy private school education to do well at a science fair. For example, one boy I met named Garrett Yazzie, he lives on Navajo Nation, and he was scraping by in a rundown trailer with no heat or hot water. And yet, and also in school, he was sliding by on C's and D's, so he wasn't even doing well in school. And yet, because he lived in this trailer with no heat and hot water, he felt compelled to design a solar-powered heater. And he designed it out of junk he found around his town, like a 1967 Pontiac radiator and a bunch of soda cans, just a bunch of junk that he found around town. And he created a solar-powered heater that does amazingly well and could heat his home, could heat the hot water, and it also ended up winning him national science fair awards as a result.
Yeah, it's an amazing sort of necessity is the mother of invention story. The other part of that is that when they did have heat, it was from this old coal heater, and that would give his little sister, like, life-threatening asthma problems.
Right. The night that his sister almost died from an asthma attack was the night that he decided that he had to enter the science fair and build this solar-powered device. So it really is a question of just seeing a need in your own community or your own family that needs to be met. And that's all it takes to do well at a science fair. You don't need to be a genius.
And Garrett eventually went off. He did go to school far away, which was sort of an amazing experience, but a daunting one as well for him.
Sure, sure. He ended up, as a result of winning so many science fairs, an engineer at General Motors ended up taking Garrett under his wing and sending him to a private school back east. And it was a struggle for him, but he stuck with it, and he's now in college. And this never would have happened to him. He never would have gone to college if it weren't for science fairs at all. He probably would have dropped out of school, and that would have been kind of the end of his story. And yet, because he entered the science fairs, his life is completely changed. Another thing that changed in his life was once Hollywood heard about his story, Extreme Makeover Home Edition decided to build his family a new solar-powered home. And it's a $1 million home. It's beautiful. I went to see it. And that was all because of him entering a science fair.
And the
cool thing, it really shows how science fairs can change a student's life in so many ways.
Yeah, and the design there is based on the traditional Hogan. Is that right?
Yes, yeah. It is.
That's really cool. 1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Karen next on the line from Austin. Hey, Karen.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go right ahead, please.
I've enjoyed the discussion very much, and I wanted to weigh in as a former principal and as now a college professor and a consultant working with struggling schools.
Great.
When you see the discrepancy between how we look on international tests in science and math, part of the discrepancy is that we are trying to educate everybody in the United States, hold on to all of our students, and that causes us to compare less favorably to schools with more elite tracking systems who are only giving a high school education to their best and brightest.
Yeah, that's a really interesting perspective.
Traditionally, our best and brightest have been receiving a fabulous education through advanced placement courses and baccalaureate programs, honors programs, internships, and so on, that is, for the past 10 years, very much at risk because of No Child Left Behind. Our schools are spending so much time, energy, money, and focus on preparing students for a multiple-choice test that we have dropped in many schools science fair, advanced placement courses, in order to get everybody ready for a test, which tells us no more about their probable success than that they're probably successful at taking a multiple choice test.
Yeah, what do you think about that, Judy?
I couldn't agree more. Mm-hmm. That is such a good point to make, that our schools are spending so much time and resources on bringing the low-achieving students up to par that the really smart kids are all but ignored. And it's, I think, one thing that could change to help is simply, and science fair attendance is down also. And I think part of the reason for that is that science fairs are considered an extracurricular activity. They're not part of class time. And I think if science fair research, hands-on research, were changed so that it was part of class time, it was actually a class unto itself, which is often the case in some of these schools, I think it would go a large way towards not only increasing attendance towards science fairs, inciting interest in science fairs, but I think we could kind of incite change on that simple a level. I think more kids need to do science fairs. I only did one science fair when I was in school, and it was extracurricular. Nobody took it that seriously. But if it were a class, and students and teachers, for that matter, could devote time to it, I think that that could go a large way towards inciting interest in science. Because science is all about getting your hands on things and fixing things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about taking a multiple choice test. And I think that's why science fairs are just so key to changing America's educational system.
Yeah, it's interesting because the counter argument is, well, the brightest of our students will be fine regardless. But why wouldn't we want them to be exceptional?
That, exactly. I think by kind of letting the bright students just kind of get by and coast and kind of do what they do without really trying too hard, we're wasting our country's most valuable resource. These are the potential Einsteins, the potential Mozarts. And here we are just kind of saying, oh, you know, do whatever you want to do. You seem to be doing okay. And it's just such a shame that these kids aren't being challenged.
Did you also find that they inspire one another?
Absolutely. I think that these kids at the science fair, the really smart kids at the science fair, the ones who come back year after year and win these awards, are the cool kids at the science fair. They are pointed out. Everyone knows them. Sometimes they're actually asked for their autograph, which I thought was fantastic.
Yeah.
Here's another story that I just love. Is there's one 16-year-old girl in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
She was pretty. She was popular. And then suddenly she ends up with leprosy, which who knew that that even existed in this country? And yet here she is with leprosy, and you could imagine what might happen to a 16-year-old pretty popular girl who has leprosy. She could end up being an outcast. And yet, because she entered her science fair, she actually did her research on her own condition and the treatment that she was getting, and she turned her science fair project into a platform to spread the word about leprosy and how it's a treatable condition, it's not contagious. And as a result of that, she became even more popular in her school. She got a boyfriend as a result.
Hmm.
And that just goes to show how you can take lemons and turn them into lemonade in the worst absolute situation. And I think that's what all the students at science fairs have in common, is that they're being optimistic. They're looking for the solution to even the worst problems imaginable.
Judy Dutton's new book is called Science Fair Season, 12 Kids, a Robot Named Scorch, and What It Takes to Win. Judy, it's been a really interesting hour. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thanks to all of you who are listening this hour. We really appreciate you coming along with us on our daily explorations of all sorts of elements of this world that we share. Thanks especially to those of you who have gone online to KERA.org or who have called 1-888-694-6931 to bring us down to our current total left to raise, just under $35,000, $34,984. If you have not yet made your contribution, it looks like this might very well be the last day. The closer we get to zero, the more likely we are to absolutely finish by this afternoon. So we'd love to hear from you now.
Hey, Chris, I think that number is a lot closer to 30,000 because we just got word that three friends have joined the station. In the last few minutes, we heard from Scott and Claudia Davis in Dallas. They became friends, Jerry Rodleff and Richardson, who also became a friend. Thank you so much. We also had a friend's contribution.
Joe and Kathy Van Blargen.
Right, but there was another one that decided to remain anonymous. So thank you very much for your contribution. And also, we heard from a friend of mine, Ray Benavidez in Richardson. Ray, thank you so much for supporting the station and supporting the show. Of course, you're all friends of ours when you support the station today, because your contribution today gets us the rest of the way to the end of this drive, and we'll be able to accept a $5,000 additional gift from Diane Wenger, who's a friend of KERA. She's also a family law attorney in Tarrant County, and if we can end the drive today, she'll give an additional $5,000 to the station. So please go online right now to kera.org or call 888-694-6931.
So thank you very much to Nancy Wilson in Dallas, Tina and Trevor Langton in Plano, Kristen Jackson in Grand Saline, Sandra Flores and Raul Guzman in Southlake. Really appreciate your contributions. We have raised, it looks like in the first hour of Think, very close to $10,000, about $9,500. Wonderful, wonderful. We would love to do the same thing in the second hour of Think, and it's certainly possible if you will make your contribution now. I would venture to say, if we can get to $20,000 by the end of this hour, certainly by the end of the day, we will be finished with this drive. We'll be able to accept this very generous challenge grant from family law attorney Diane Wenger in Tarrant County. Your contribution now, it doesn't have to be $5,000. It can be $50. It can be $500. It can be whatever amount you want to give at kera.org or at 1-888-694-6931.
$29,574. Four or 79, one or the other, to go in the drive. If it's 79, I'll make up the other $5 or something. But
you're good for it.
Yeah, that's right. Just $29,500 and change left to raise in the drive. If you have been considering making a gift at one of these higher levels, as said, just in the show alone today, we've heard from three or four people at the friends level today. That's $1,500 contribution. You can spread that out to $125 a month. It's very easy to do. To make it more affordable, you also can take 7,500 American Airline Advantage miles when you become a friend of the station as our thank you gift to you, in addition to the fact that you get this great programming every day. And I'm not just talking about the show that Chris and I work on here, Think, but all the programs you listen to on KERA. But of course, your $50 contribution, your $500 contribution, whatever is right for you is right for right now to help us end this membership campaign, online at kera.org or on the phone at 888-694-6931. And just a reminder, we do have copies of Judy Dutton's book, Science Fair Season, available when you join the station.
This is your source for NPR News, 90.1 KERA, Dallas-Fort Worth, Denton, 100.1 K261 CW Tyler, 88.3 K202 DR Wichita Falls, 99.3 K257 EV Sherman. Wanted to get that legal ID in before we forgot about it, because sometimes we get so excited about talking to you about where we are in the fundraising campaign. So we wanted to get the legal stuff out of the way. Want to also make sure that we remind you of the phone number. It's 1-888-694-6931. You can also make your contribution at kera.org.
I want to thank Chris and Leslie Robin in Plano, James Fowler Jr. in Dallas, and Sally Glass in Dallas. They've joined the station in the last few minutes or so during the show today. Thank you so much to each of you. We'd love to read your name, at your choice, of course, when you call 888-694-6931 or when you contribute online today at kera.org. You know what we're talking about. We're talking about the spring membership campaign. We're just $29,500 and change away from wrapping this drive up. That's so close. If your contribution of just $100 or $200 will get us so much closer, perhaps a dollar a day works out to just $365 for the year. You become a day sponsor and you get three personal messages announced on the radio station on the day of your choice, provided it hasn't already been claimed by another day sponsor. When you call 888-694-6931 or when you go to kera.org, you can find out more about that.
Your contribution makes us able to provide the programming that you love on KERA. IRA. Your money pays for programming that comes in from other sources. It pays for the production of local programming. It pays for things like having a tower to broadcast the signal for hundreds of square miles. We are really glad to be in places like Tyler and Wichita Falls and Sherman, which fall sort of outside geographically where our tower would go, just in the Dallas and Fort Worth area. We're able to do that thanks to your contributions. It really is thanks to your support of the station that we're able to be in all these places to provide you with the podcast every day free of individual charge. We ask, though, that you consider the fact that there is, in fact, an expense attached to that and make a contribution of support. And as you probably know from having done generous things before, you think at first that you hate to part with your money, and then it feels so great to do something for somebody else. It is wonderful. And honestly, you're also doing something for yourself because you listen to the programming every single day.
Especially when you tune in later today or at the latest, hopefully, tomorrow morning and hear pledge-free programming. And we won't be back with a membership campaign until the fall. Call 888-694-6931 or contribute online at kera.org. Just $29,500 and change left to raise. Please do your part right now. And thanks.
The Think production team includes engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.